the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who, in many instances, have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
Welcome to What Radicalized You, a podcast of stories and experiences that have shaped people's ideas about our world and the way society should function.
My name is Judy, pronouns she, her. I live in San Francisco. I would say I'm a plant mom, and I also really like biking. But I'm here to talk about Hotels Not Hospitals, which is an organizing group within San Francisco that's focused on pooling community resources to be able to put unhoused people in housing. And we are a team that works alongside unhoused people, and we have a partnership and work together rather than typical nonprofits or the city that typically adds strings to whatever shelter or aid that they provide to the unhoused population in San Francisco. So, like, a really quick way of describing Hotels Not Hospitals is that it is mutual aid at the scale of housing. And most recently, we've been able to shift from hotel rooms to actually apartment leases. So we now have 3 apartment leases for 6 unhoused people, and we've been able to end like a combined 20 years of homelessness for our partners. So the work that we do is supposed to show how like the city isn't doing enough, and that any kind of current structures that we have in place through like a capitalist state will never be able to achieve like total freedom for everyone. So yeah, that's kind of who I am, and like I'm part of that team, and we've been organizing since like September, and I feel very lucky to be here. What radicalized me? I'm gonna go really way back to like my baby phase, because I was born in China. When I was 5 months old, my family moved to Canada. And I think growing up for at least my first 10 years of life in Canada, where my parents didn't have a lot of money, it was just my father working as a postdoc. Postdocs don't make a lot of money. And we were in Montreal in a city, and my mom couldn't work because she didn't have a visa. So they were surviving on one very small income, and they didn't know a single person in Canada. They didn't speak much English at all, and they were able to take care of me, and my mom was able to eventually give birth to my little sister in Canada thanks to affordable childcare and affordable healthcare. And I grew up with this experience for the first 10 years of my life. And my parents also had free French classes and English classes for them to integrate. Then when I was 10 years old, my family moved to Kansas. And as you can imagine, Kansas doesn't have a lot of people of color, and we are all Chinese folks. And when we first showed up, I think realizing how much it mattered to look like other people or be able to fit in like other people, like that really stuck out once we showed up in a place that was so homogeneous, like Kansas, where, you know, it's a lot of white folks who also have some form of religion, and they mostly gather with religion. And then also there's a certain kind of politics, which doesn't always include public health care or like affordable child care. Like, it's not ingrained in the politics there. And so my first like moment where I realized that I was quote unquote radical was actually just realizing that healthcare wasn't guaranteed to everyone in Kansas. And also realizing that my face wasn't standard. Like, I would never be the norm. And I would always have to enter spaces making sure that I could integrate. And I had to consciously decide, like what mannerisms or what words do I use to be able to integrate well? I distinctly remember, like, in social studies class, we were, like, talking about how healthcare, like, we were debating whether or not we should have healthcare as, like, a universal right. And I just remember me saying that, like, the current healthcare system in America is like saying that poor people deserve to die. And then someone responded like, but poor people just like don't work hard enough for healthcare. And so I think that was a moment where I was like, huh, like maybe not everyone is like on the same page for things that feel like basic human rights. The second time that I got really radicalized was dealing with the identity stuff, because I mean, I wasn't surrounded by a lot of Asian folks. My high school was like 1,200 people, and we had like maybe 30 Asian kids, and we were all like immigrant Asian kids who were just trying to figure out how to like fit in and like make friends. So we weren't really trying to figure out like, how do we connect to our heritage? How do we feel close to like our family culture? Like, how do we build solidarity with each other? Because we're so focused on how to achieve certain levels of whiteness so that we could be perceived as successful, as desirable, as valuable. And I really didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it. Like, I also remember when I was applying for colleges, I refused to apply to any colleges in California because there were a lot of Asians there. Like, that was how much hatred that I had for my own culture and myself growing up in that place. And I can't, like, it's hard to, like, there's no way to point blame, you know, at, like, any single person. In the end, it's like you point blame at a system where, like, you know, like, whiteness is put at the top. Like, that is a definition of, like, white supremacy. Like, being white is normal. Being white is, like, ideal. And so I didn't really acknowledge that until I went to school. And I went to college at MIT, where it's, like, a lot of smart Asian kids. It was interesting because I, for a long time, was defined by how smart I was and how good I was at like math and science. Even, and like, I kind of was like good at all of the things that was expected out of Asian people. And so going to MIT, there were all of like a lot of other people who also have those same kind of characteristics. But they also had this like added Asian American culture that like I didn't, like I didn't know, you know, what boba was. Like, I didn't know a lot of these Asian American things because Asian American culture wasn't a thing in Kansas. And so, like, I don't think I was able to really address, I don't know, I wasn't able to address a lot of stuff about my Asianness until like even after college. But during college was when I realized, oh, this is kind of fucked up. Like, I've been really hating myself for so long. And now I'm in a place where there are other people who have Asian culture, and there are other people who, you know, can talk about their immigrant experience and relate to me. And I took my first Chinese class and took it seriously, because Chinese school, no one ever takes it seriously. So I went to Chinese class, and then there were other folks like me, and we would talk about like how difficult it was to go home to China and then not be able to speak to your grandparents, how like difficult it is to feel comfortable with our identities and with our faces and with, I don't know, like, how do you not feel like you're wearing a costume when you're wearing like a qipao? Or like, how do you feel confident like sharing dumplings with someone? Like, I think it was just these very basic things of just liking myself and my culture I had to get through while I was in college. And when I was in college, for one summer, I went to San Francisco to intern. And where I lived in San Francisco and was in the financial district, and right across from my building was a homeless person. And she was there every single day, and she would be in distress every single day. And I think seeing how little care there was for her or about her, like I would see people in like nicely dressed suits, like stepping over her crying body, like on the pavement. And I just didn't know, like something sat really badly with me about it. And I didn't know what to do about it. Like I didn't know, I felt like, and I think back on it, I'm like, why didn't you like do anything more than like asking her how she was? Like, I don't know. Like, I just had no idea what to do. And I was a transplant in San Francisco and I didn't know. And so I didn't do enough. But I think that was the first moment where I was like, okay, like shelter is a basic human right. Why are we not acknowledging basic human rights? And like, why are we not acknowledging like the inhumanity that's happening right in front of us? And like, how are we comfortable like being on a phone call and stepping over like an actual full conscious human being who is going through like so much like degradation and depravity because of poverty and like the state that we're in. But also I was a college student. So like I didn't spend enough time like thinking about it. I spent a lot of time just figuring out like, how do I achieve like white man levels of success? Like, how do I get a good job? How do I get financially independent? Like, how can I be in a place where eventually when I have to take care of my parents, I can take care of them, you know? And I really was not thinking critically, and I just did what everyone was expecting to do and like followed the path of prestige of like what would look best on a resume. I don't know what you could brag about with people. And I was so like extremely miseducated my entire life. But I think it's partly because you have to be miseducated to be able to survive in a place that is like so oppressive and violent, right? Like you have to buy into a lot of ideology so you can, you know, be able to tolerate like someone living on the streets. You know, like, you have to be like, oh, this is just a state of the world. Like, this is, like, inequality is just, like, inherent to existing. And I think, like, I absorbed a lot of that, like, growing up, because I was, like, so focused on just being able to, like, exist and like, achieve, like, a success that, like, my parents, who, like, immigrated from China, who knew no one, who, like, wanted to create, like, a better life for themselves and for their kids, like, I just wanted to do something and, like, make everything that they did worth it, right? And so I got to the point where what I did was worth it. Like, I mean, for them, like, I now have a good, like, job. I'm financially independent. I'm living in San Francisco, and I have, like, I'm okay, right? And I thought that that would be fine. But as I live in San Francisco and I see, like, the immense number of encampments, and then I see, like, my school alumni just not, just, like, enjoy hanging out in the marina, going to the Dolores Park and, like, drinking and, like, just hanging out, like, in the city that they, like, didn't, like, they didn't grow up in. Like, we definitely gentrified it. Like, we didn't do, I don't know, just a lot of people, like, are really unaware of, like, what kind of role they have in the city, especially when they have, like, a certain level of wealth and a certain level of education. Like, it's so easy to get, like, wrapped up. It's just, like, insane how, like, how once you have a certain level of education and money, you can literally live your entire life only surrounded by that level of education and money, right? Like, you don't have to ever meet anyone who's going through actual poverty and, like, suffering, like, every single day and living paycheck by paycheck. Like, that's not even something that you have to worry about once you make a certain amount of money, once you achieve white man levels of success, right? Like, and so this is my third level of, like, radicalization. Like, why did I hate it? Like, I fucking hated it. Like, every single day at work, I'd be like, this is so soul-sucking. Like, I have to show up to work and pretend like I care about, like, business, and I care about making money, and I have to care about, like, looking a certain way and presenting myself in a certain way. And the way I have to present myself is still white man levels of success, right? Like, I have to use the right words, and I have to portray myself in, like, a really approachable manner. And, like, when people make, like, dumb jokes or, like, insensitive comments, like, I'll have to, like, giggle and be like, haha, like, that's just how things are. And, like, every single room I'll be in is going to be led by a white man who has a lot of authority and, like, will probably not listen to, like, any of the people who are women or people of color, you know? And I'm like, it's just like, why do I hate all of this? Like, why am I so unhappy? And then the pandemic hit. And then I really had time to think about, like, why I was so unhappy. And it's because, like I was trying to be okay with how much, like, inhumanity there is around us. Like, at every levels of society, like, there are people, like, dying on the streets. And then there are people who have to put on a face every single day at work. Like there are, I mean, clearly there are different, like, levels of oppression, levels of suffering, but, like, all, like, everyone is suffering. Like everyone is suffering. And like, we can't, like, why? And we can't acknowledge each other as, like, full human beings with full backgrounds, full lives, and, like, full consciousness for some reason. Like, we've just decided to make living, like, so complicated for each other. And I, like, didn't know where to start. And then I finally joined the Democratic Socialism of America. DSA has, like, a bunch of working groups where, like, they actually work on real projects. And Hotels and Hospitals was one of the projects that, like, spun out of it. We're not part of DSA, but it's, like, endorsed by DSA. So I joined Hotels and Hospitals, and then I also joined Food Not Bombs. And Food Not Bombs it's like an anarchist collective where we cook food in the Mission every Wednesday and we distribute it out to folks. And organizing has been, like, the biggest healer of my soul and of, like, myself. People are really speaking, like, from the soul. Like, we're talking about real vulnerability. Like, how do we feel about existing here, you know? And so, like, organizing has been just, like, transformative for me because it's, like, totally shaped my, like, political ideology. And at this point, like seeing how the state has consistently failed homeless people in San Francisco, and then also seeing how capitalism, like, forces us to dehumanize ourselves every day because we have to make money just to make money. We're not doing any work to actually support anyone. Like, I think there's a term about how, like, the revolution will never be funded. Like money is not flowing in a way to serve humanity. Money is flowing away to just make more money and, like, and feed into the inequality. And so everything we're doing just goes to, like, the wealthiest. I mean, I am getting, like, how much I'm making is not how much my company charges other people. Like, they pocket more than, like, half of what they charge for my labor. And it's, like, constantly. I am like reminded just like how soulless everything is. And so, I don't know, organizing has been like key. And I went to a rally most recently led by Defund SFPD Now, where they're focused on, you know, like, I think it's pretty obvious, like, they're trying to defund the police. And also, I mean, ultimately the idea is to abolish the police. There was a rally where they brought in a bunch of people who, like, a bunch of groups that do community care, and Hotels Not Hospitals was one of them. And I think meeting all these different groups of people who actually gave a shit about other human beings and wanted to spend time to give a shit about other human beings and collect resources and build networks that exist outside of oppressive, like, state and capitalistic structures. Like, that is love. Like, and I think ultimately, like, I also want to say that love is, like, what's really radicalized me. Like I feel, and this sounds so, like, hippie, but I feel, like, so much, like, so much more love and, like, so much more intensely than before, because, like, anyone's dehumanization is our own dehumanization, right? Like, I'm dehumanized when I can't, like, look at a homeless person in the eye and, like, not be able to acknowledge your whole humanity. Like, back, like, when I was interning, like, I didn't know what to do for her. Like, I didn't know how to take care of her, and I didn't even know how to approach her, and that was dehumanizing for me and, like, her, like, for not me, like, not being able to just, like, be like, hey, let me see you as a full human, and let's, like, figure out, like, how to, like, take care of the situation together as, like, a partnership. And I think, like, organizing has made me realize, like, community care and, like, love for each other as, like, human beings and acknowledging each other as human beings is, like, the way to go. Like, that this is a way out of, like, such an oppressive system, and this is, like, what heals us. Our system isn't meant for us to, like, know people of different classes. It's so easy for income classes to only hang out with each other and then never understand what other people are going through. Organizing has been, like, the key for everything.